Rockland.
The following program is furnished by its producer, host, and sponsors.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for tuning in. We are live in the studios, and you're listening to Health and 30 on WRCR AM 1300 Radio Rockland. And it's streaming live online at WRCR.com. I'm your host, registered nurse Barbara Ficarra. Health and 30 brings you 30 minutes of the latest health and medical news and information with leading guest health and medical experts. Today we'll be talking with Dr. Carl Sullivan about nicotine addiction. Dr. Sullivan is a psychiatrist, professor, vice chair of the Department of Behavioral Medicine and Psychiatry at West Virginia University School of Medicine, and medical director of the substance abuse programs for West Virginia University Hospitals. Dr. Sullivan is board certified in psychiatry, internal medicine, and addiction psychiatry, and is a fellow in the American College of Physicians. Listeners, if you have any questions about smoking, call in today. The number is 845-624-1300. And joining us now is Dr. Carl Sullivan. Hi, Dr. Sullivan. How are you?
I'm doing very good. We're having a little bit of a breakup issue on the line, but I'm doing terrific.
Well, thanks so much for joining us today. Can you hear me clear?
Well, no, you're not clear, but I can hear you.
Okay. Well, I'm sorry about that, but that's good if you can hear me, so then you can hear all my questions that come through.
Okay. Speak slowly, and I'll do the best I can.
Okay. And just let me know if it's unclear, and I'll repeat myself.
Okay.
Okay, great. Thanks. So, Dr. Sullivan, when we think about addiction, we usually think about people who are addicted to drugs and alcohol, and the drugs being heroin and cocaine. And some people may say that smoking is not an addiction because they can quit at any time. What would you say to those people?
Well, there's a lot of parts to that question. First of all, I think it's important to recognize that of all the drugs of addiction, including heroin and cocaine and alcohol, that the one that is the most addicting is nicotine. Now, we're going to come back to the second part of your question about quitting anytime they want to, because that's sort of a fantasy that some people have. But first of all, let me just say that if you look at everybody... Well, let's just start with cocaine or heroin. Let's just start with cocaine and heroin. You know, probably half the people that ever try those drugs, roughly half the people that ever try those drugs get hooked on those drugs and, you know, become addicted to it. The other half will be able to try it and stop it without too much difficulty, or they'll move to something else. But the interesting thing about nicotine is that 90% of the people that ever try nicotine get hooked on nicotine. We don't have any other drug. I don't care how addicting or how famous or infamous or how bad we perceive another drug. We don't have any other drug. I don't care whether it's heroin or cocaine or methamphetamine or alcohol, whatever it is. No other drug is close to nicotine in terms of addiction. Now, we can come back and talk about this some more. Part of it has to do with the fact that nicotine is legal. But there's also some properties about nicotine that make it just almost the perfectly addicting drug. Now, as far as your question about, you know, people say they can quit any time. You know, there's an old joke in the nicotine addiction treatment research circles, and in the people that who do research and do a lot of treatment for folks that smoke. There's an old saying you see all the time, and it's from Mark Twain, and he said, oh, you know, stopping smoking is a piece of cake. I've done it 1,000 times. And, of course, that's the great irony is everybody that smokes has quit many, many times. However, staying stopped seems to be a whole lot more difficult. And, again, that's because of the extremely addicting nature of the chemical nicotine once it hits the brain. It is very, very difficult to stop.
Break down the cigarette for us and describe to the listeners what is in it that is so addicting. It's the nicotine, though, and why is that so addicting, though?
Are you asking why cigarettes are so addicting or why nicotine is?
Well, cigarettes and nicotine, right?
Well, let me first of all, that's a good question, because a lot of people think it's tobacco that is addicting, and that's just not the case. When you light a cigarette and you inhale, the smoker typically gets somewhere roughly around 4,000 different chemicals will go down into their lungs. 4,000 different chemicals. One of which is nicotine. There's 3,999 other chemicals in nicotine, and some of them cause cancer, and some cause high blood pressure, and, you know, some are toxic, and some are poisonous, and actually, if we're absolutely truthful, in that 3,999 chemicals, there's even some vitamins in tobacco when you set it on fire. Let's face it, tobacco is a plant, and plants, all plants have some B vitamins, and so there are some. There are some vitamins.
Right. But that doesn't weigh out.
No, but anybody who says they smoke to get their vitamins, right, of course, is just lying to themselves and everybody else.
Right.
But the one drug that we found that's in burning tobacco smoke is nicotine, which is a drug that produces tremendous rewards in the user. And, of course, any drug that you can smoke, whether it's cocaine or nicotine, gets into the lungs. And when it gets into the lungs, it gets into the bloodstream very quickly, and in a matter of seconds gets into the brain. And in nicotine's case, it gets into the brain and goes right to the same places that cocaine or any other drug goes. It's sort of the reward center that we all have in our brain. And nicotine goes right to that reward center and just jazzes it up, and the smoker says, yeah, that's good. Now, they don't get all excited and jump around, but the smoker says, yeah, that's good. I feel better. I feel relaxed. I like that. And, of course, then that keeps you coming back for hit after hit after hit.
And it has the same effect as those drugs, though?
I'm sorry?
It has the same effect as those drugs? Where?
Well, all drugs of addiction have one. I think it's a good question, because all drugs of addiction have one thing in common, mm-hmm, or they wouldn't be addicting. So you can ask a question, well, why are some drugs addicting and why are some not? Well, the reason some drugs are addicting is because a drug, in order to be perceived as really rewarding, and in order for a drug to be addicting, it has to be perceived by the person who uses it as being rewarding. In order for that to occur, there's a very tiny area in everybody's brain, whether you're an addict or not. We all have this little tiny area. It's about the size of your little fingernail, and it's called the nucleus accumbens. And all drugs of addiction work directly or indirectly to increase the amount of pleasure chemical out of the nucleus accumbens. And that chemical is called dopamine. And we all have it, and it's essential for living. But all drugs of addiction, whether it's nicotine or alcohol or methamphetamine or heroin or cocaine, they all will increase the amount of dopamine that's coming out of this little tiny area in the brain called the nucleus accumbens. And the reason some things are not addicting, for example, and I use this all the time, the reason nobody ever gets hooked on broccoli is because you can cut it up and snort it in through the nose, or you can smoke it, or you can do whatever you want to, but there's nothing in broccoli that's going to cause a dopamine surge to occur out of the nucleus accumbens. Nicotine, as it turns out, is a very potent reinforcer that causes a nice surge of dopamine, and the people who smoke find it to be very pleasurable.
So that's why people who smoke, they just keep craving that cigarette? Is that why people, when they smoke, they just keep craving that cigarette then?
That's partially true. Why do people crave? Well, the interesting thing about nicotine is it is almost, if I was an evil scientist and I wanted to invent the perfect addicting drug, it might be nicotine. Because what nicotine does is it's quickly, you know, when you smoke it, it goes in through the lungs, gets into the bloodstream, it goes immediately to the brain in something less than 10 seconds. In the brain, it causes a little burst of dopamine to occur in the brain, and nicotine attaches to specific places in the brain. We call them nicotinic receptors. It attaches to these receptors and indirectly causes a burst of dopamine to occur out of the nucleus accumbens. Now, this is important because nicotine attaches to the receptors, but in about 2 hours, that nicotine that you smoked has almost completely fallen off those receptors and is being broken down by the body and metabolized, so we get rid of it. Well, when the nicotine falls off the receptors, the smoker starts to feel cravings, which is why every hour or two, when the nicotine leaves the receptors, what the smoker will start to do is feel a little uneasy, a little irritable, they can't concentrate, they start to get a little antsy, and, you know, it's nothing major. It may not even be anything that those of us who are watching this person would notice, but they just start to get a little uncomfortable, and they start to think about and crave nicotine, which, of course, then means they're going to, you know, fire another cigarette up, have another hit of their drug, and they're going to settle themselves down. And that's what basically a smoker does. All day long as they keep smoking to sort of settle their, settle these mini withdrawals down that they go through every hour or two.
Mm-hmm. And how fast can you become addicted to smoking? I mean,
you know, it's an interesting question because there's some new stuff that has come out that shows that adolescents, they start looking at adolescents and they start smoking. And it turns out within the first week or two that you start to smoke, that the nicotine already starts to alter the brain chemistry, the normal brain chemistry, and starts to make the brain become dependent on nicotine. People used to think it took years and years, but clearly that's not the case. If you start smoking when you're 13 or 14 years old, right away you start to alter and in some ways damage the brain, and the brain starts to become dependent upon nicotine. It does not take very long at all. And that's something we've really only learned in the past couple of years. It used to be assumed that you'd have to smoke for a couple of years before you got addicted, but now as we've looked at it, it's clear that it starts to happen very quickly once a smoker picks up and starts inhaling nicotine.
And what is that, within a week or two that could, they can become
within a
addicted?
Week or two, it starts to occur, which is why you don't see people smoke for a week or two and say, oh, this is not a good idea, I think I'll stop.
Right.
And usually once the kids pick it up, especially because, you know, adolescents' brains are not fully mature, once they start smoking, it's difficult for them to stop. And, you know, in the United States today, we have two large groups of smokers who are still smoking. And, you know, I don't want to overstate this, but the two large groups tend to be blue-collar workers who tend to be very highly addicted and, you know, usually in their 40s and 50s, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And the other group, though, are the adolescents and young adults, people in their late teens and early 20s who think that nicotine is not that bad or that, you know, smoking is cool or whatever. And they start when they're 13 or 14 or 15 years old, and by the time they're 19, they're already pretty hooked. And there's no way that's going to be easy for them to quit. So we have a large group of folks, of people in their late teens and 20s who smoke, as well as this much more hardcore smoker who tends to be a little bit older.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the things that's probably worth mentioning, Barbara, is that in 1964, the United States, that's when we had the most smokers in the United States, and at that point about 48%. Of adults. Almost half the adults in the United States smoked in 1964. And then the Surgeon General's report came out that said it was bad for you and that it caused heart disease and cancer and all this other stuff. And since 1964, there has been a long but steady and somewhat and kind of slow decrease in the numbers of smokers. So now in the United States, in the year 2008 or 2007 when it was last looked at, we're down to 21% of adults in the United mm-hmm. States still smoke cigarettes. So it went from 48% down to 21%, which is really a dramatic drop.
Mm-hmm. That's good news.
But as you look at that, in 1964, smoking was across all socioeconomic groups. But now, when you look at it to see who's smoking, you're finding out that a lot of people with the resources who are, you know, and I hate to say it like this, tend to be more white-collar workers and people who have really, you know, listen and pay attention to their health have
mm-hmm.
quit,
mm-hmm.
have quit smoking, either by using medication or by their own, doing it through their own, initiative.
Right.
But the group we have left, and I look at this all the time, certainly you can still even find some doctors and nurses who are smoking, but when you really look at who the majority are, what you see are blue collar workers, many of whom are not as well educated. And that group tends to be very highly addicted to nicotine, and they make up a big chunk of that 21% that's still smoking.
Mm-hmm. It seems like prevention seems to be a key factor for these smokers.
Say that again.
Prevention seems to be a key factor to help these groups avoid smoking from the beginning. Preventative programs for smoking.
Well, prevention is only so helpful. You know.
Mm-hmm.
I guess everybody knows. It's taught in schools, it's everywhere on billboards
right.
and news. I mean, everybody knows that smoking is bad for you. And about 70 to 80% of people who smoke
mm-hmm.
would like to quit. And I've even seen one statistic that said 90% of smokers would like to quit if it were easy.
Mm-hmm.
But it is such a powerfully addicting drug that quitting smoking and staying off tobacco is really very, very difficult.
But if they don't take that first cigarette, though, right, that won't lead them down the path of smoking.
Right. If they don't take the first cigarette, you're not going to obviously become addicted to cigarettes. And, you know, it's interesting. We've had this education in schools, public schools, and you know, for, oh, gosh, I don't know, 3 decades at least, or maybe 4 decades. And some kids will hear the words, and you know, and they'll learn the message, and they'll not start. But others, you know, live in households where smoking's accepted, mm-hmm. or they, you know, they're from their peers, they think that, you know, smoking is somehow cool. And so, and of course, when you're 13 or 14 years old, you're invincible.
Right.
And you don't believe it's ever going to be a problem. And so, you know, you think it'll never happen to me. I'm never going to become addicted. I'm too smart for that. And so they start out smoking innocently enough. And the next thing you know, they're completely hooked. And we do know the earlier that you start smoking, the more difficult it is to get off eventually. So, you know, occasionally here in West Virginia, we'll have some kid who comes in, and not only do they start smoking when they're 9, but they start, you know, dipping snuff when they were 7.
Oh, gosh.
And they're just completely, completely, highly nicotine dependent. And to get those people tobacco-free, nicotine-free is really, really a challenge.
The number of teens today that smoke, is that down as well, or has that increased?
The number of teens?
Right.
Is staying pretty steady. We're not making a whole lot of, it doesn't appear we're making a whole lot of progress in that group, because they still, you know, that's a group that, I mean, it's not as much as it was in the 60s and 70s, but that number has not fallen nearly as dramatic as the people in their 20s and 30s and 40s, especially in the 30s and 40s and 50s who quit smoking. Again, teenagers, you know, they feel immortal.
Right, yeah.
And sometimes to feel cool, they need to smoke. They need to feel a little bit bad, a little bit edgy. They got to kind of, you know, look, have an image, and so they'll start smoking. They don't realize that it's as addicting as it is. And the next thing you know, they're seniors in high school, and they're already having to sneak cigarettes all the time because they're addicted.
Right. And it's physically, I mean, it's so bad for you, you know, potentially for heart disease and respiratory illnesses. And, I mean, not even to talk about the wrinkles that it causes and, you know, the smell that comes out of your skin when those people, you know, when people smoke. It's just,
I mean, you know, it's not just nicotine. Nicotine is really, nicotine is just this powerfully addicting drug that keeps you coming back for hit after hit. But it's some of the other nasty chemicals in tobacco that leads to heart disease and high blood pressure and strokes and cancers, lots of different kinds of cancers. Now, if we see somebody with cancer of the mouth or the tongue or the throat or the food tube, you know, it's almost always associated with smoking. If you get a cancer above your shoulders, somewhere in your head or neck, it's almost always associated with smoking. A lot of people think that, you know, the major cancer is lung cancer, and certainly lung cancer is a big, big problem in both men and women now. Mm-hmm. And sadly, despite everything we've done and everything we know, you know, once a person gets lung cancer, their chances for long-term survival are not good. They usually die within the year.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, by that point, you know, by the time somebody has lung cancer, there's really not much you can do, and talking about nicotine addiction at that point seems kind of almost wasteful in some ways.
Right.
You know, you get heart disease, a lot of heart disease. You know, there's no question heart disease is highly associated with nicotine addiction, as well as with, you know, the other things that are in tobacco smoke. And people, you look at people, if you know, people that have heart attacks at younger ages, oftentimes it's because they're smokers. And we've known for a long time that cigarette smoke is just really bad for your coronary arteries, and it's one of the major things that you can do to help improve your longevity is to stop smoking cigarettes as soon as you possibly can.
Mm-hmm. And is it true?
And yet, despite saying this, and I've seen people, you know, who have lost limbs, they've lost parts of their legs because the arteries in their legs become so damaged from the cigarette smoking, they no longer can get good blood flow into their legs, and so they have to have an amputation. And I've seen people like that, and I'm sure many other doctors have seen the same thing. You'll go to their room and see how they're doing, and find a pack of cigarettes, you know, under the mattress or under their pillow or hidden in a sock or something on their other foot. That's just unbelievable. I think nicotine addiction is so incredibly powerful that for some people there's just it seems to be almost impossible to quit.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really concerned now about this. You know, we're down to 21% of adults still smoke cigarettes, but we somehow have to come up with treatments that will help that group. And I guess I want to acknowledge something at this point, and that is that up until recently, and I don't know exactly when, but up until the past 10 years or so, most people who quit smoking did it on their own. You know, they tried many times, finally they were able to put the pack down, throw it away, get rid of their ashtrays, and, you know, clean out the car and, you know, arrange their life somehow so that they were able to quit smoking and stay off cigarettes.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to me over the past several years that is changing, and that the group of cigarette smokers we have left in the United States are really hardcore, very, very dependent nicotine addicts. It's almost like, if you were to think about it, we're kind of now down to the really hardcore heroin addict equivalent in the nicotine world. We think about these heroin addicts who are just, you know, kind of walking the streets and living under bridges, and they can't quit, and they'll sell everything, and they'll lie, and they'll do whatever they need to do because they just can't quit the drug. And some of the nicotine addicts that are left now are just so incredibly dependent that they would almost do anything to keep smoking.
So,
again, the big difference between those two analogies is that cigarettes remain legal and heroin is obviously illegal. So there's some differences in the way you go about obtaining these two substances. But I do think that the good news is for smokers out there in your audience is that there are a lot of treatments available now, and I would encourage people to try them.
What are they? What go through
the treatments?
What would some of the treatments be?
Treatments can be broken up, I suppose, into two categories: the ones that have been shown scientifically through very rigorous study to work to help people quit smoking, and those are. And I'll just sort of list them.
Okay.
The first one was the what's called Nicorette gum, the nicotine gum, and it came out about 1982 or 1984, someplace in there. And a lot of people don't know how to chew the gum, which is a big problem with it. If you smoke a pack of cigarettes a day, you need to chew at least 12 pieces of gum a day.
Mm-hmm.
And the way you chew the gum, let me just kind of go through this real briefly, if you don't mind, because
sure.
A lot of people don't know this. If you're going to use the Nicorette gum to quit, and it does work well, you get the 4 milligram pieces. You put the gum in your mouth, you chew on it two or three, four times, and then you park it between your cheek and gum, and you'll feel it tingling like crazy between the cheek and gum. And after a minute or two, it'll quit tingling, and so you chomp on it 3 or 4 more times, and then park it again between the cheek and gum, and it'll tingle, tingle, tingle. And when it quits tingling, you chomp on it 3 or 4 more times and park it again. And after about 10 minutes or so, you'll park it, after chomping on it, you'll park it between your cheek and gum. It won't tingle, which means all the nicotine's out of it, and you can get rid of it. But if you're going to use the nicotine gum, you need to, and you smoke a pack of cigarettes a day, you need at least 12 pieces. And if you smoke a pack and a half a day, you need more like 16 pieces of gum.
Is that a prescription or is that over the counter?
No, you can get that over the counter. So I was going to say, that one you can get over the counter.
Okay.
The other one you can... get over the counter now is the nicotine patches. Nicotine patches came out about 15 years ago and come in 3 different strengths. And the patches are convenient because you can put the patch on, it stays on for 24 hours and provides nicotine through the skin, which somewhat relieves the craving. We're finding that the strongest patch, 21 milligrams, may not have enough nicotine in it to settle down some smokers, which is why some smokers, even though they're on the patch, will continue to smoke, trying to get enough nicotine into their system. But the patches work very well, too. You're supposed to use them for 10 weeks. A lot of people don't, which is a problem. They start the patches, and after a week or two, they quit, and then they unfortunately, many of them relapse. But the patches have been shown to work. And by the way, Barb, all these things I'm talking about, you can talk these things over with the physician, who can describe it in more detail. I'm just kind of going through this very quickly.
Sure.
The nicotrol inhaler, which is this little thing that's a little white mouthpiece that has a cartridge in it with nicotine, and is available by prescription.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that you just draw on. You put it between your lips and you just suck on it slightly, and you just draw nicotine into your mouth, and then the nicotine is absorbed in your mouth and gets in the system. That works very well. We studied that here at WVU, and it's an excellent product. There's a nicotine nasal spray that's the most powerful of all these substances, and you just put a spray, one puff up each nostril every hour or two, and it's very potent nicotine, and it's probably works the best of all the NRTs. There's a nicotine lozenge that I don't know very much about called Commit that's been out there for a while,
mm-hmm.
and it is also useful. Then there are two medications that are non-nicotine based. One of them is a medicine called Zyban, which is the generic name of that was Bupropion, and it came out in 1997, and is a medication that helps with the cravings and helps people quit smoking, and it's been shown to more than double the quit rate versus the placebo pill, and has been very useful to many, many people. We actually worked on that here at West Virginia University, and I was part of the original project that got that drug approved, and I know it's helped many, many people.
Mm-hmm.
For the past 10 years or so, there hasn't been any new products until varenicline, which is known as Chantix, came on the market about 2 years ago. And Chantix is an interesting medicine. It works on the same receptors as nicotine does in the brain. It's what we call a partial nicotinic drug. It goes to the receptors and stabilizes them so that people don't feel the craving, they don't feel withdrawal. And the studies have really shown that of all the medications that have come out, the Chantix, and I hate to sound like an advertisement, but Chantix probably has the most efficacy mm-hmm. of any of the medications that are out there for smoking cessation.
Well, that was my next question to you. I was going to say, because you are an expert in this field and you deal with this all the time, if you had to choose one.
I'm sorry, I can't hear you.
I'm sorry, maybe I'm moving away from the mic. I was going to say, because you are an expert in the field and you do work with people all the time in regards to this, if you had to choose one treatment that really works well, what would it be? Would it be the Chantix?
Well, there's no one treatment that's right for everybody.
Okay.
You know, the one that shows the greatest results is Chantix. Mm-hmm. The other thing I need to say about Chantix is that if you sign up for that medicine, they have an added bonus, and that is everybody who signs up to get that medicine is eligible to get a free counselor who will help you manage the cravings and how you deal with all the other issues about smoking. You know, smoking is half nicotine addiction, it's half habit.
Right.
I've had many people say, you know, their car wouldn't start unless they lit the cigarette.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, how do you deal with that part of it? And the thing with Chantix is they give you a counselor that helps you with the cues and situations in which you're most likely to smoke. And that's a tremendous benefit that people get who sign up for that program. The medicine's not terribly expensive, I don't think. And, I hate to sound again like an advertisement, in 2008, it's probably the best product we have. Now, I think for some people, especially depend upon their insurance and this and that, there's nothing wrong with the NRTs, which are the nicotine replacement products, the gum, mm-hmm. the patch, the nasal spray, and the oral inhaler. We use those all the time, and they absolutely will help people. But if you're going to use them, the one thing is you have to use them in sufficient quantity so that the smoker is not craving nicotine. If you underuse those products, the smoker will still be craving nicotine like crazy, even though they're chewing gum or they've got a patch on or whatever. And it's important to remember that we need to give these people enough so that they're not craving mm-hmm. or we're not likely to be successful. But all the products, mm-hmm. Zyban, everything I mentioned, they all work.
Mm-hmm. One quick message that you want the listeners to walk away with, what would it be? We have one minute.
The main message is that if you're a smoker, don't give up. Give it a try. The average smoker has to try several times, six or seven or eight times to quit before mm-hmm. they make it. See your doctor. It's the best thing you can absolutely do for your health, and I think people ought to just keep after it until they're successful.
Thanks. And teens, stay away from those cigarettes.
Stay away from the cigarettes.
Yeah.
Don't start. If you haven't started, don't start.
Exactly. Thank Dr. Sullivan, thank you so much. Thanks for joining us today. Thanks for sharing your expertise with us. For more info, go to healthin30.com. And listeners, as always, if there's a health topic you want to know more about, email us. Go to contactus@healthin30.com. And don't forget, if you have a health question, send it in to healthin30.com, and the experts will answer it. And next week, tune in again at 5:30. Edie Brouse, nurse attorney, will join me on the Health in 30 radio show to talk about the unintentional medical mistakes and wrongful prosecution of nurses. Who's responsible? This show will focus on the impact of how this impacts nursing and patient safety. Thanks for listening. I'm Barbara Care for Health in 30. Have a great week. Stay safe and healthy, and as always, speak up and ask questions. For upcoming shows, keep a check at healthin30.com. See you next week. Thanks.
AM 1300, WRCR, Spring Valley.
AP Radio News. I'm Ross Simpson. Barack Obama says comments from Senator McCain and President Bush hinting that he would appease terrorists are dishonest, divisive attacks. Obama singled out McCain today for criticism about claims that Hamas, the terrorist group, supports him.
Despite the fact that I've been crystal clear, time and time again, that until Hamas renounced violence, recognized Israel, and abided by previous agreements, we should not deal with Hamas.
Yesterday, the president said in Israel that some people believe that there should be negotiations with terrorists and radicals. Today, on his campaign bus in West Virginia, Senator McCain said he wonders what Barack Obama and the president of Iran would talk about.
I want to talk to him about his stated position that Israel is a stinking corpse? Or does he want to talk to him about their export of weapons that are killing young Americans, or does he want to talk about their continued pursuit of nuclear weapons?
Even with oil jumping above $127 a barrel, Saudi Arabia says it sees no reason to increase oil production until customers demand it.
Supply and demand are in balance today. If you look at inventories worldwide, they are also high. So the fundamentals are sound.
President Bush got the bad news at King Abdullah's horse farm in the desert. In the meantime, the Bush administration is suspending daily oil deliveries into the government's Strategic Petroleum Reserve for the remainder of the year. Officials in China are predicting that the final death toll from this week's earthquake could reach 50,000. Aid workers in Myanmar are still struggling to get even the most basic data about the needs of up to 2.5 million survivors from this month's cyclone. State media reports the death count is more than 77,000. Ellen DeGeneres wants to make things legal between her and her longtime girlfriend.
There are wedding bells in Ellen DeGeneres' future.
I would like to say right now, for the first time, I am announcing I am getting married.
Yeah!
DeGeneres said on her talk show that she can now get hitched because the California Supreme Court has struck down a law banning gay marriage.
I'll tell you who the lucky guy is soon.
She's such a kidder. Everyone knows DeGeneres has been dating Portia de Rossi for more than 3 years. De Rossi was in the audience beaming.
I'm so excited. If I'm this emotional now, just saying, and I can't imagine how that's going to be.
No wedding date was announced. I'm Michael Weinfeld.
With his follow-up to Fahrenheit 9/11, Michael Moore wants to examine America as an empire, study its standing since the 9/11.